This is What's at Risk on WBZ News Radio 1030 and WBZ.com with Mike Christian of Risk Strategies Company.
Hi, I'm Mike Christian, and welcome back to another edition of What's at Risk. Let us know what you're thinking about by sending us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com. Tell us what's on your mind. This week on What's at Risk, we take a hard look at the law from distinctly different perspectives. First up, we'll speak with Brad Bailey, partner with Denner Pellegrino. In an enlightening interview, Brad gives us his views on the implications of false accusations of coaches and teachers by students, parents, and overzealous prosecutors.
Step out of line, the man come and take you away.
Then, in segment two, we visit with attorney David Dow, author of Autobiography of an Execution. In one of our most stark and fascinating interviews, David gives us a behind-the-scenes look at the last-minute chaos that generally accompanies an execution. Over the recent years, there seems to be an odd and almost inexplicable fixation in the media regarding crimes of a sexual nature. It is difficult to fathom how the sensationalism of such a topic overshadows stories of world hunger, pandemic disease, or poverty. Perhaps even more troubling is the frenzy fashioned by the media that creates the fixation. When a story is released, a virtual lynch mob assembles to see to it that those accused by some unknown individual or individuals with untested credibility are brought to some form of justice.
So come, you desolate men, our freedoms have been abused. We'll now stand to free the falsely accused.
There is no question about it. Whether it is coach accused, teacher accused, counselor accused, it's a great headline. In these instances, it also plays to a parent's worst fears. Still, we cannot ignore the bedrock of the American criminal justice system, the presumption of innocence. While it's fine for DAs to treat victims with dignity and compassion, to ensure them a voice and protect their interest, it's not okay to do it at the expense of this fundamental principle. It is the nature of the relationship between athletic coaches and their younger players. Position of authority and control, substantial age gaps, maturity versus youth, father figure, etc., that make coaching relationships rife for abuse. It is easy for the predatory coach to use that relationship and the inherent power to take advantage of younger and more vulnerable players who want to please or even curry favor with their coaches. By the same token, it is the very nature of these relationships that also make coaches targets for abusive prosecutions. A disappointed, jealous, or a vindictive player who didn't get the playing time she wanted, or who didn't have the relationship another player had, or whose soccer experience didn't measure up to expectations, can exploit the alone time, one-on-one practice sessions, the car rides, the unsolicited back rub, and the misinterpreted email, and conjure up all manner of accusations. Thankfully today, a victim is heard and is taken seriously, and with all the resources now made available, shelters, victims advocacy groups, rape shield laws, victims witness advocates, victims right laws, impact statements, the pendulum has definitely turned in the opposite direction. The problem is, it's turned way too far in that direction, and we're seeing more and more non-substantiated, uncorroborated cases being presented for indictment with reckless disregard as to whether they can actually be proven and with reckless disregard for the impact and devastation to the accused.
But she's got me asking questions. She's got me on the fence with that little Susan Sophie. She's a complex cat. And she's always been so hard to figure out. Yeah, she always likes to leave me with a shadow of a doubt.
Brad Bailey is a partner and criminal division chief at Denner Pellegrino, where he concentrates on criminal litigation. His background in white-collar and high-end criminal defense work and securities regulation includes the defense of cases and matters before the Federal District Court, the Superior Court, the Supreme Judicial Court, the Court of Appeals, and the District and Juvenile Courts.
We're with Brad Bailey, partner, criminal division chief of Denner Pellegrino. So, Brad, there have been many recent headlines about teachers and coaches being accused of some type of abuse of kids. Do you think this is a growing phenomenon?
Well, I think it's an increasing phenomenon in terms of what people are seeing as, in some instances, ways to grab headlines, ways to get attention for their office, and ways to really seek some publicity. And that I find on the defense side extremely troubling. Whether or not these types of cases have always been there is another question. But what my concern as a defense attorney is, Mike, is that I think there's very often a rush to judgment and a rush to publicity. And I see that as a real difference now than when I was a prosecutor some 20 years ago doing these same types of cases.
Do you think there is definitely a difference from the time you were on the other side of the fence?
Yeah, certainly one always talks about the good old days. But when I was a prosecutor, I really operated under a reasonable doubt standard. If I didn't think I could prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt, I didn't bring it or I didn't request that it be prosecuted. I think today's DA's offices and today's prosecutors, many of whom are very professional and very ethical, tend to go in these types of cases on a mere probable cause standard. And that is the standard in order to get an arrest or an arrest warrant, and that is the standard in order to get search warrants, and it is the standard to bring a case to court. But I think when you're dealing with people's reputations, with people's lives, in cases like this, I think it's incumbent on the prosecuting authorities to insist on more and to do their due diligence and do their research beforehand and then ask whether or not they can, in fact, prove these cases beyond a reasonable doubt before they bring charges instead of going on the probable cause standard and then letting a jury decide.
Of course, it does seem like we've gone from one extreme to the other. We have the abuse of kids from priests in the Catholic Church and all the things that happened in the 60s and 70s, and now we're at a point where it seems to me that parents and the system sort of coddles and caters to the kids and the accusers.
Yeah, we tend to be a nation of extreme pendulum swings, and when I started as a prosecutor, and that goes as far back as the early 1980s, I think we had a system where we very often put victims or alleged victims on trial, where they had a very difficult time having a voice, where things were certainly very much skewed in the opposite direction. And there is no question that at that time, we needed to fix things and change things, and that the victims did need to have a voice, and they did need to have a support system, and they did need to have people who could help them negotiate a very difficult and complex system. Unfortunately, the byproduct now 25 years later is that we've gone way to the other extreme with victim empowerment and victims' advocacy and victims' networks that really don't, in my opinion, help find the truth, which is what we're all about, but they are all about just making sure that the victim's rights are upheld. and that now skews things back away from the defendant in a manner that's very troubling to a lot of us. And in some ways, we wonder whether there's an enabling system in which certain alleged victims who really haven't been properly vetted and really haven't been thoroughly scrutinized are just rushed through the system without question, without any type of skepticism to begin with, simply in the interest of supporting victims and the political capital that comes with that. And we've got to get back to the middle point. We've got to get back to what this is all about in the criminal justice system, which is a search for the truth.
Now, coaches and teachers and priests and these positions of authority, they do have, it is sort of an inherent position of power over their players and their students. So wouldn't a role like that be appealing to predatory types, though?
There's no question, if you're looking at this from the theory of the prosecution, that it is very susceptible to predatory relationships and abusive relationships. You have people in positions of authority, in positions of power. You have individuals that are outside, in many instances, of structured settings where they're the ones that are creating the rules and dictating the rules. It is not uncommon. I had four high school athletes in my family, and three went on to be college athletes. It's not unusual for coaches to either take aside star players and work with them alone, or sometimes to try to mentor struggling players and take them aside and be with them alone. In a world in which both parents are working or in single-parent households, it's not unusual for coaches to take on the role of carpooler and to have a player and a coach alone driving back and forth from practice. And all of these types of situations really do have an inherent danger in them if you have the wrong type of person in the coaching ranks. And then add to that internet communications and the fact that folks tend to be far less inhibited on the internet. And when you get instances of people that don't have proper filters or working filters inside their own heads, liberties can be taken there too. So yeah, it is an area that's absolutely susceptible to the type of abuse that DA's offices are looking at, but then you can turn that around from defense perspective and realize that it's also an area that is absolutely rife for so-called victim abuse, for disgruntled players to try to get back at coaches who haven't played them, for alleged victims to take advantage of their knowledge that they too are alone with coaches, and so there's nobody there to corroborate what their allegations are. And you have a situation that really is absolutely prone to abuse on either side. And that's why we on the defense side really feel that a lot more scrutiny should be given to these cases than sometimes it appears is being given.
Well, folks, this has been a great banquet. I want to thank everybody. But now it's time to hand out the award for Little Soccer League Coach of the Year, and I mean, I think this guy wins it hands down. He has donated hundreds of hours to the league this year, even having the kids over to his own place to help them work on fundamentals. Everyone knows him only by his first name, of course, because that's all he gave us. He's a jokester. But ladies and gentlemen, enough talking. Here he is.
Oh, I can't believe it. Wow, thank you, everybody. Thank you. This is awesome. I should really just say two things here tonight. One is Sunday is the last day for returning your uniforms. And two, I'm a former registered sex offender. Thank you. Good night.
And I don't give a damn about my reputation. Oh, no, not me.
We're talking with Brad Bailey, partner with Denner Pellegrino.
I know in our town we had an example of a case, exactly what you just said, a kid that wasn't being played enough in his senior year. You know, one thing led to another, ends up making, sort of abuse, accusing the coach of abusing him, and then, you know, it kind of took on a life of its own, and, guy's reputation is basically ruined. I don't know how it ultimately played out. Do you see a lot? Can you give us maybe some examples of that, some actual examples?
Well,
one
of the principal examples is a case involving the coach of the University of North Carolina women's soccer team, And there, several players leveled allegations of harassment and sexual abuse against the coach. And I believe, I'm not sure that those, the civil side of those things has been totally resolved yet, but there was certainly an implication that some of it might have had to do with not being played as much or other players being favored over the plaintiffs in that case. And that's a perfect example of it. While it didn't involve coaches, obviously the example of the Duke lacrosse players really exemplifies what I'm talking about in terms of rushes to judgment that can absolutely ruin careers and taint people for the rest of their lives when you have an overzealous prosecutor, such as in that instance down in Durham, Mike Nifon, who clearly was trying to get political capital out of the indictments and the prosecution, regardless of what the facts were telling him. And these are the types of situations that happen in cases when you have members of the community of stature and standing. And you just have to be very wary of the prosecuting authority that is simply seeking the headline without necessarily seeking the truth. And obviously, any time we have these types of cases, and I can't comment on any live cases I might have right now, but when we have these types of cases, that's one of the things we're looking at. We're looking into, is this just jumping the gun in order to get the cameras and the Klieg lights turned on?
You mentioned social media briefly before in the answer to one of the questions. How does social media contribute to the problem, and then also on the other side of it, how can social media be used to create and develop corroborating evidence?
Social media is certainly exploding in the criminal defense field, and it's no secret that those of us who do these types of sexual assault cases on a regular basis look almost from the outset at Facebook and MySpace pages and any type of the social networking pages that have all sorts of revealing information about particular individuals. And the problem with the social media and what we're finding in those cases in which we're representing certain people accused of cyber-type crimes is there does seem to be a psychopathology of people who just lose their inhibitions, lose their common sense, in many instances, take on different personas completely detached from themselves because they feel there's an anonymity in cyberspace that can let them get away with things that they otherwise would never do. And that leads many people down the path of very poor judgment, very poor communications, very poor contacts, very, very poor downloads. And has led to for us, a whole lot of additional clients. But in terms of the corroboration, sure, you can whether via search warrants or whether via cooperation, you can look at instant messaging, you can look at Twitter, you can look at Facebook postings, and you can find all sorts of communications and contacts, which the writer or the initiator of it can certainly hit the delete button as many times as they want, but forensic recovery experts can recover just about anything, no matter how many times you've deleted it from the memory bank of the computer. And so that's very often done. And there have been some recent cases in which people accused of sexual assault and other related crimes have been caught and have had their cases corroborated based on communications back and forth. Now, the problem with that also is, you know, communications can be also susceptible to double entendre, misinterpretation, and all sorts of other meanings. And the problem became so bad that recently the Supreme Judicial Court had to strike down a case in which a prosecution based on the language used in back-and-forth communications was found not to be obscene according to state laws because the legislature hadn't made it so, and the Supreme Judicial Court said, you know, you've got to specifically legislate that language itself used in these types of communications can be obscene too. But it is certainly a tool for the prosecution to try to corroborate allegations, and it's definitely a defense shield to try to come up with information, or as we call it, dirt on somebody that could be directly relevant to whether or not the crime occurred.
From your perspective, from the defense perspective, what can coaches and teachers do to better protect themselves?
Well, I think judgment and wisdom is certainly what they really need to do and follow. I don't think anybody should put themselves in an alone, one-on-one situation with anybody. I think they should always do their best to have somebody around or nearby. If you're going to work with a player after hours, you really ought to see that there's an assistant coach nearby. If you're going to have contacts with players on a individual basis, you should probably try to do it in a setting where parents are home. Maybe go to a player's house and make sure parents are nearby. Perhaps even if you really want to talk about expectations or disappointments or recruiting, invite a parent into the conversation with you so you're not alone and in isolated situations. I think it's difficult to avoid the carpooling situation. So if you're going to carpool, make sure it's a real carpool. Make sure it's not just picking up one player. Always go out of your way to pick up a number of players. And when you communicate online, know that even though you may be thinking that you're communicating to that one person, you're communicating via the net. And in theory, you're communicating to the entire universe because those communications can be retrieved and they can be read.
That's great advice. Brad, how can we find out more about your practice and your firm?
Well, my firm is Denner Pellegrino. We are a 25-lawyer firm that specializes in criminal defense work but also has a very strong civil component involving plaintiffs' work. And I've been in the practice for 28 years. I'm a former state and federal prosecutor and now do exclusively criminal defense work, both in state superior court and in United States District Court on the federal side. And find my work challenging and invigorating and very exciting.
And is there a website for Denner?
Yep, it's dennerlaw.com, dennerlaw.com, and there is going to be very soon a bradbaileylaw.com component as well.
Can't judge apple by looking at a tree. You can't judge honey by looking at the bee. You can't judge a daughter by looking at the mother. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
Time for a CBS News update. We'll be right back with more What's at Risk.
Oh, how am I doing, baby?